It is 25 and a half minutes past 9 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone of Central Texas, where I am. Dr. Don Clark, also in Central Texas, but he's in the Garden Spot, Garden Valley, out there just, about 90 miles east of Dallas. Beautiful cattle ranches around, and it's a home for many ministries, and Don's been active in some of those, and he's most active these days with Creation Moments. He's a member of the board there. Biochemist with years of pharmaceutical experience. I mumbled that. Pharmaceutical experience. And he would have corrected me, but I didn't give him a chance. Don, we're delighted to have you again, and this weather has been gorgeous in Texas. Your grapes are all have smiles on their little faces now. And production is in full swing. But we want to talk about, well, let me put it this way. It used to be that now you're cooking with gas meant you were doing well.
It was a good thing.
Now it can get you in trouble. What's going on here with gas stoves and what's wrong with them?
Well, the bottom line is there is absolutely nothing wrong with them, but we have an agenda, and there was a study done by, let me see if I can find the group, the Rocky Mountain Institute. Mm-hmm. did a calculation study. I wouldn't even really call it a clinical study of any type. But it was a calculation, and the agenda, of course, of the not of course, but of the Rocky Mountain Institute, whose motto is "Energy Transformed," is to look for alternative means of alternative ways of energy, and away from basically fossil fuels.
You might call it a green energy organization, eh?
Very green. So, passive solar and these things, they have come up with some very interesting, because I visited this place, I think it's outside of Denver, Colorado, as I recall, and it's an interesting place, and actually the Aspen Airport uses very passive solar heating in order to heat the airport in the winter, so it's they do have some interesting stuff. However, there's an agenda with them. Anyway, they published this paper, which is called "Population Attributable Factor of Gas Stoves in Childhood Asthma in the United States," and this paper, which is only 4 pages long, apparently, is all based on a statistical epidemiological calculation or model called this population attributable factor. And the population attributable factor tries to account for the proportion of incidences in the population that are attributed to a certain factor. So the factor here is exposure to gas stoves, and the health effect that they were looking at was asthma. So you kind of ask the question, what is the population of people in a certain group that have gas stoves, and of those people who have gas stoves, how many children have how many of those households have children? And then finally, how many of those households have children with asthma? And so out of that, they came up with some percentages, some alarming percentages by doing this calculation.
Now, one second here. Where do you gather data like that? Or do you... I mean, you get it from the phone book? I don't think there are even phone books anymore. Where do you get the data of how many people have gas stoves who have children who have asthma? That alone would be a project.
Yes. Well, they didn't do any polling. They didn't do any type of research on their own. They just got the data from the literature. So the story would go like this. and, you know, 35% of the households in the United States are using gas stoves. Okay, so that's a number, 35%. How many of the households have children? Well, I don't know what the number is, but let's say we, you know, obviously that number is known. It might be 50% of the households have children, or 75% of the households have children. Well, of the households who have children, and of the households that have children, how many of the children have asthma? And then that's another percentage, right? And so you take these numbers and you plug them into the equation. No association whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They're just plugging numbers into an equation. Then they get the likelihood that the children with asthma, their asthma is caused by the gas stoves. No direct data.
Well, and yeah, they come up with a 12.7%. It sounds so precise.
It sounds very precise, but, you know, this is, again, you can get all kinds of precision when you're just doing a calculation. But indeed, you know, that's not a precise number, and it's a ridiculous number, because they're saying that it's 12% of the 12.7% of the children who live in households with gas stoves have asthma. And it's not that they have asthma. They you know, say that the gas stoves caused asthma.
Hmm.
Now,
well, there's an outfit called the CPSC, that's the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which apparently is a government agency, another one I didn't know about. They got a hold of this report, and they concluded what?
Well, they concluded that it was bogus.
Oh.
You know, it was, I think that's, I don't know where you're getting that particular.
Yeah, well, they're the ones that are saying now, they're trying to start the movement to ban gas stoves based upon this Rocky Mountain Institute. So,
yes, so they're taking this study and they're running with it, and they're basically, you know, they're saying that gas stoves are as bad as having breathing automobile emission, which is
secondhand
ridiculous smoke,
baby. Yeah, they were talking about the methane and nitrogen dioxide levels produced by gas stoves. And in reading this article, by the way, this is an article from the Cornwall Alliance. I'll put it in the chat window here in just a few minutes, and you can follow up on this if you'd like. But one of the studies in calculating what the emissions from gas stoves were like was to run a gas stove for hours in a room sealed off by plastic. Now, just how realistic is that?
Oh, it's very, very realistic, obviously. No, not at all. So, yes, they have a gas stove, and they're sealing off the kitchen and running it. And lo and behold, they found that the levels of nitric dioxide was 100 parts per billion in the kitchen. And if you open the windows, you don't get nearly that much. And a matter of fact, other studies on the nitrous dioxide levels was on the order of 34 parts per million for several hours of a gas stoves and ovens use. And the National Ambient Air Quality Standard of the Environmental Protection Agency said that levels below 53 parts per billion are absolutely safe. There's no health impact are expected for air quality in this range. So, you know, they had to artificially create nitric oxide, enhanced nitric oxide levels in order to get above this magic 50 parts per billion level. And that's not what these gas stoves are producing. And it's certainly not what these gas stoves are producing in an open house, much less, you know, a sealed off kitchen. Who cooks in a sealed off kitchen? And yeah, no one, obviously. But so there's a lot of hype here. And that's what the bottom line for, unfortunately, some of this science that is, that so-called science that is going around, you know, is a lot of hype, and it's promoting a particular agenda.
Did anybody recognize the name Rich Trumka?
No.
He's mentioned in this Cornwall Alliance article.
Yeah, he's a commissioner of that organization, it says. So, yeah.
Richard Trumka Jr. was appointed to a 7-year term as the commissioner of the CPSC, which is, I've never heard of the organization either. I think that the organization just sprung up out of nowhere, or maybe Joe created this organization to give this guy a job. His dad is Richard Trumka Sr., labor leader.
Uh-huh.
United Mine Workers from 1982 to 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And then the AFL-CIO secretary up until 2009. So Joe saw the opportunity based on having his own kid do all kinds of wonderful and interesting things to make money. So he's appointed Richard Trumka Jr. to do the same thing. This guy didn't know anything more about gas than anybody.
I just checked on Wikipedia, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission is and I don't understand what this means, an independent agency of the United States government. What does it mean, independent?
And being an agency of the government.
It sounds to me like they're lobbyists, I would guess.
It's got to be under the executive department. I mean, I don't know that it's connected to the Department of Energy. Or maybe the interior. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not. Maybe nothing.
Oh, but how independent is independent? I mean, that means the government doesn't pay salaries. Maybe.
No.
It's independent of the industry. It's independent of the industry, but it's not an organization like Consumer Reports.
It's an organization.
Private organization.
Yeah, it's a private organization, but it's also trying to maintain the fiction that it doesn't have, it's not under congressional oversight,
mm-hmm.
which is not true because Congress can reach out wherever it wants to.
Well, their website is .gov, so that should be a clue.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a government agency. It's a governmental agency. That is not necessarily a part of, let's say, the gas stove manufacturing industry.
Well, see, that's well, the
so word independent of that.
The word independent carries that meaning, that they're not swayed unduly by any given industry or company or political persuasion. But clearly that's not the case.
Who do they support? I mean, we know that they don't like gas stove manufacturers, so who do they want to put
here, in here's place? A suggestion. I think this is in the other article that we're considering today, too, and that the agenda that Dr. Don mentions is green energy, is electrification. Right. They don't want gas because it isn't electric.
Right.
And among other things, it means, you know, a gas stove doesn't report usage. Mm-hmm. Think about smart appliances now that are electric that record everything you do, including the contents of your refrigerator,
mm-hmm.
to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea here, I think, is to get rid of non-electric appliances. So it would include not just gas stoves, but gas water heaters, gas furnaces, and that's a huge chunk of people, both in Europe and in the United States, Don.
Yes, well, and, you know, Biden mentioned it when he, you know, he first started office that he wanted to, he's going to do away with fossil fuels. Now, it's interesting, you know, that term fossil fuels sort of indicates that, the fuel created during fossil time. Well, you know, when was fossil time?
Yeah.
But, you know, natural gas is a gas that, as we've talked about before, is a gas that is produced naturally by microorganisms. In swamps, Louisiana has a lot of natural gas, and it's also produced with landfills. You get natural gas out of landfills, and now we have technology to trap that natural gas and to use it in such things as gas stoves and other things. So this is a push, not to keep us safe. This has now become a mantra of the government that we scream, oh, we got a safety issue, we got a safety issue, and so we need to do something about it. And so the thing that we're going to do about it, especially in this case, is we're going to eliminate gas stoves. So now you have state governments that are banning gas stoves, for example, in new construction. And states like California, not surprising, Colorado, Massachusetts, New York, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington have bans on gas appliances in new construction. But in opposition, 19 other states recently enacted laws preventing government from banning natural gas and propane. So we have the battle of the states, if you will. And so, the federal government has to come in and sort all this out. And that's where this independent group, comes in, the CPSC, because, oh my goodness, we found that gas stoves are a problem. And since it's a federal government agency, if you will, then we're going to have to eventually dictate from Washington to all these other resistant states, if you will, this banning of the natural gas, all for this purpose of switching us over to electricity. Now, not to mention that, you know, where do you get your electricity from, which is another issue. And we'll never, have enough windmills or wind generators or solar generators to be able to supply any type of, our energy needs through those sources. So where do you get the energy from? And, right now we do, we're getting energy, a good portion of our energy from burning either coal-fired plants. Power plants it wasn't that long ago, probably maybe 10 years ago, was 80% of our electricity was produced by coal-fired plants. Well, of course, those, they made those an issue. We're burning the cleanest coal that you can get in the world. And we have scrubbers on those. So the emissions from the coal-fired plants are, very, very clean. And yet we want to do away with that. And of course we want to do away with oil and now natural gas. So what are you going to, how are you going to create energy if all of these other sources are being banned? And of course we can't talk about nuclear power because that's so dangerous. Obviously we have the examples of Chernobyl. And so we're going to have a dilemma, if we keep going down this road. Those countries, for example, that have banned natural gas, Europe is moving in this direction, which is crazy. Natural gas is much more efficient than electricity. It takes a lot more energy, from electrical heat For example, than it does from just burning natural, gas.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but efficiency means cost per British thermal unit, for example. If you have an electrical appliance like an electric heater versus a gas heater, you'll get more warmth for less money from the gas. I remember up in Minnesota when natural gas first came through, this would have been in the late 1980s, early 1990s, and we hooked up to the system, our energy bill dropped by about 60% once we got natural gas heat. And that's a big part of the year, I'll tell you, in Minnesota. David can vouch for that, I think. Gas is cheaper.
And, you know, now if you convert over from natural gas to electricity, you're going to be paying four times as much.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's not two times. It's going to be four times as much to convert over to electricity. I mean, you know, when my dad was growing up, he delivered coal to people up in Illinois. And, a lot of people had coal-fired furnaces, you know, in their homes. They didn't, or oil. And then, as you said, they converted over to natural gas, and you save money on that. Not only did you save money, but it burned a whole lot cleaner than coal or oil did. And so now, you know, we want to convert over to electricity, and everybody's bill is going to increase. So you have, and if you're not using coal or natural gas or something like that to generate electricity from, then you're quadrupling and, you know, multiple, the cost is going to go through the roof for these other technologies that don't even provide, for example, a continuous source of energy like solar or wind. You know, when the sun stops shining, solar is not working. And when the wind stops blowing, of course, we're not getting any energy
from windmills. Does this all boil down to global warming or climate change? Is that the impetus behind all this? Because that's another phantasmagorical creation of selective science, where data has been gathered that fits a certain agenda, and it's advanced as science, and therefore it must be true. This has got to be beyond even expense of energy or reliable energy. I don't think those are small factors. That there's a bigger agenda here.
Oh, there's much bigger agenda, yes. And the bottom line, as far as the UN is concerned and the World Economic Forum, is this area, you know, called global warming. So we've got to do all these things because, you know, our world is warming up. And the data really isn't showing that. And so... You know, they and these global alarmists will tell you, oh, we've got 10 more years before the Earth burns up. We've got, you know, 12 years, which was a couple of years ago, Cortez was saying, oh, you know, we're going to burn up. The Earth is going to burn up in 12 years if we didn't do anything. Well, we probably have, you know, 9 more years left before the Earth burns. And so we got to do something, and we got to do it quick, and we got to force people into all of these alternative, technologies and energies.
Well, it's worse than forcing them. We have to scare them into obedience.
Yes, and scare them. And so one way is, you know, to scare them. Everybody loves children. Well, I wouldn't say necessarily everybody, but most people, you know, most normal people love children. And you don't want to harm your children, do you? Mm-hmm. And so if gas stoves are causing children to get asthma, then, you know, we got to get rid of our gas stoves. And so that's the tactic that has been used over and over, was used very successfully during COVID, as we all know, to scare people into not only wearing masks, but hunkering down at homes and not going out and social distancing, all of which now has been proven to be absolutely worthless and didn't do anything other than harm kids, you know, that harmed kids because it harmed their psychic. And they didn't have a normal development of social interaction, not only with other kids, but with the, even with their parents.
You know, you've just given me a vision of the next great scare coming down the pike. I can almost, I can see it now. Garden hoses. One,
well, those can,
they're made from plastic. They come out of from petroleum.
They're made out of petroleum.
And two, you can trip on those things if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. And lastly, a child puts a hose in their mouth, turns on the water, they could drown. So I think maybe banning garden hoses. Yes.
The thing that keeps wandering through my noggin, Don, is who gains from this? Who's going to be?
Good question.
Who is on the receiving end of all this magnanimity? Who gets all the money that now we pay four times more for electricity? The local co-op, we have a regional co-op up here, and all the electricity goes through them. Now, they buy the power from this guy, who buys the power from this guy, who eventually has bought the power from some power manufacturer, either a water dam or a coal-fired plant that generates electricity. But, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any individual or any organization that's going to make out more money because we're getting rid of our stoves.
Well, if you're forcing people into electricity, then we need, and you're saying that, oh, you can't have coal-fired, you know, powered plants.
Right.
You know, water is fine, but oh, you've got the environmental issue. In order to have a water-powered plant, you've got to have a dam, and of course, the dam causes environmental issues, and so we can't build those anymore.
Really irritates the salmon population too.
So this is a Russian-Chinese plot to destroy the nation.
Well,
is it as simple as that?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a Russian-Chinese plot, but guess who has most of the lithium in the world now, thanks to our government, and that's China. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to, you know, convert over to electric cars, you're going to need batteries, and the batteries use lithium and other metals. And we have put a kibbutz on.
I want to end on an encouraging note here because I've just read an article. It's on the Good News Network about 3D printed batteries that do not use lithium. They're more efficient than lithium batteries, and they charge faster. And you can cut them to shape so they can fit a bazillion different kinds of appliances. And then my point here is that I think if we just let nature take its course, so to speak, that technology will develop that solves these problems on its own without the help of plans and politics and government pressure. If we just let private enterprise do its job, these problems, if they're real problems, will resolve themselves.
They will, if there are real problems. That's right. If there's a need, somebody's going to figure out how to do it. And, okay, that somebody might even get rich over it. Well, good for them. You know, that's okay. That used to be the American way.
Well, imagine if lithium batteries were no longer important. All of a sudden, what would happen to the electric vehicle industry? It would boom with these cheaper, more flexible, more powerful, more efficient batteries. So if we just, you know, let it happen naturally, and, there's so much more to this story.
You still have the other end of the equation. Where do you get the electricity from? Mm-hmm,
yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
Even if there is an alternative to lithium, you got to, you know, it's still a battery. You need to charge it. Where are you going to charge it?
That's true. Interesting stuff. The article's in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if you'd like to follow up on this gas stove issue, and that will lead you to still further articles. There's some internal links you'll find useful, too. So, Dr. Don Clark, member of the Board of Creation Moments, their website is creationmoments.com, and there you will find a virtual library virtual meaning literal. I mean, you could download stuff, printed materials, DVDs, videos. They have a radio program that's on all over the world daily, Creation Moments. Check them out and see what you think. If you'd like to stand up for the biblical story of creation, there's a great place to get your resources, creationmoments.com. Don, we thank you. We learned something today. We'll check with you next week, okay?
All right. Very good.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Okay.
So long.
We got something solved.